Welcome to the Cohort Sisters podcast, where we bring to life the stories, struggles, and successes of Black women navigating doctoral degree programs and their lives beyond the degree. I'm your host and the founder of Cohort Sisters, Dr. Ijeoma Kola. Cohort Sisters is an online global network empowering Black women pursuing doctoral degrees by providing resources, mentorship, and community. For more information, please visit our website at cohortsisters.com. Today's guest on the Cohort Sisters podcast is Dr. Tassiana Moura de Oliveira, a Black Brazilian woman who earned her PhD in political science from the Universidade Federal de Pernambuco in Brazil in 2020. She's now a lecturer in the Department of Latin American Studies at the University at Albany. Originally trained as a lawyer, Dr. Tassiana's work explores political institutions and judicial behavior in Latin American courts. In this episode, Dr. Tassiana talks about pursuing law as a way to get out of poverty, being a Black Brazilian woman in a predominantly white male-dominated space, and how she built relationships that enabled her to pursue research internationally and eventually choose to immigrate to the United States. Let's tune into our conversation. Welcome to the Cohort Sisters podcast, Dr. Tassiana. You were just telling me that in Brazil, people actually typically say doctor first name, as opposed to in the US, we typically say doctor last name. So I am calling you Dr. Tassiana because that's what you said you wanted to be called. But just for in case anyone's listening and they're like, why are you calling her by her first name? That's because she said that's what she wanted. But can you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Where are you from? Where do you live now? And what do you currently do?
Of course, Ijeoma. I'm really happy to be here. It is an honor to talk to you and to know your work a little bit more. From Brazil, as you said, my name is Tassiana, and I am a Black Brazilian woman from the northeast of Brazil. And I like to say from the northeast and not northeastern, like a lot of Brazilians would say. There's a race thing involved in this that we can explain a little bit later. And I'm an immigrant in the US. So I've been living in the US since 2019. But with no chances of coming back, I think, since 2020. So I moved in 2021 for good.
So 2019, what a time to come to the US. What a time.
It was difficult.
I know. So we'll get to what you do work-wise. We'll get to your research. But I know where you live. You don't have to share exactly where you live. But what do you like to do? Because you live in a cold place. So what are your interests? What are your hobbies? What do you do outside of work?
Yes, I currently live north of New York, upstate New York. So it's pretty cold here. And I'm a sunny person. I love the beach. I love sunny days. I'm from a shore city in Brazil. I'm from Recife, which is a small capital, but with a beach, and we usually go every Sunday. And this is something that I'm trying to learn, and new things that I like around here. So I like to go to the gym. I like to stay active, walk my dog, but still, I'm not really a snow activities person.
Okay. Well, good luck, because that's what y'all got up there. It's tons of snow. So let's pivot to talking about your educational journey. What is your doctorate in and from what school?
Yeah, so I did my whole education in Brazil and I started law school. In Brazil, it's a little bit different. So law school is an undergrad course. So you can jump from high school to law school straight. I didn't do exactly that because I did a course before. Law was not my first choice, but you know, there was all that talk that, hey, you are a poor child of a poor family. You don't get to choose whatever you want. So you have to go and do something that makes some kind of money. And I was not going to try to go to med school. I cannot see blood. So was either that or law or engineering. So I stayed with law. Those were my options according to my family. I went to the market actually So I worked a little bit before going back to school and started my degree. And I did my master's in law as well. Then I moved to political science. So my PhD is in political science and in Brazil from the Federal University of Pernambuco.
So a very familiar story of having limited options. As a child, I totally resonate. So I actually want, this was not on the questions that we prepared ahead of time, but I'm now curious, when you decided to pivot from law to political science and even go back to school and do a doctoral degree, you know, what was your family's reaction? You know, in my, and I'll just kind of preface where this is coming from. I was on like the medical doctor track for a very long time, like my entire life. And then when I decided that I wasn't going to do that anymore, that I didn't want to go to med school, I vividly remember being like, okay, well, at least if I get a PhD, like my parents can't be mad because I'll still be a doctor. But I'm curious, you know, what your family thought is if they, you know, had decided or really wanted you to be a lawyer and then, you know, kind of now pivoted into an academic sense. I'm just curious about what their reaction was.
Yeah, I remember that talk.
I hope I'm not bringing up any trauma, any traumatic moments. Okay.
I share that with my students as well, because I know that a lot of them experience the same thing. But I was a lawyer. I am a lawyer in Brazil. I still am a lawyer. And I had that talk with my father. My mom always supported me. But I started teaching when I was working, because I was invited to teach in a tourism school law. So I was teaching law inside the tourism course, because that first course that I did was a tourism course. And then I started teaching and I loved it. And it was more like a romantic story. Like I fell in love with teaching and I wanted that for me. But the school said, hey, if you want to continue, you'll have to get a master's degree and so on, a PhD and whatnot. So I couldn't work and do that at the same time. So I talked to my father, explained to him that law was not my thing. I did not like to be a lawyer. And I wanted to go back to school and teach. And he was like, okay, I did my best, but his opinion, he did his best, but I can't force you. Then I went in this journey inside academia.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks for sharing that. And so what did you study? What was your dissertation about? And what was your research on during your doctoral degree?
Since I didn't have a big background in research during my undergrad experience, because it is possible to be like a research assistant when you're an undergrad student, but I didn't have that and I worked. So I was starting a new journey in academia and I didn't have any background. But I connected with some professors and they pointed me into a direction. This is something that I say to my students, do not start a research path if you don't love that object of study. But I started studying the process of socialization of policies. So basically it is, if you're a political player, let's say, and you can't win inside Congress or you can't win in terms of policies. So your choices are not the ones that win in a debate inside Congress. And you can use the court, the Supreme Court usually, to try and win. I'm trying to explain in simple words the process. But basically, it's the use of the courts in a political way. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes in a political way. So I studied judicialization of social security policies in the Supreme Court in Brazil.
So the vibe I'm getting, though, is that that's not necessarily what you were interested in. That's like what the people who were advising you in your program maybe worked on and then steered you in that direction.
Yeah. Just have to say, I didn't know what I wanted because I did not have the experience that I have today. Of course, if I could go back, I would do something different. But How would I know?
Yeah. How would you know? So speaking of the present, what are your current research interests? What are some of the things that you are now working on, thinking through, studying, teaching, etc.?
So right now I'm teaching at UAlbany at the Department of Latin American Studies, and I'm adjunct faculty, but I also am a postdoc researcher at the Center of Political Analysis in Brazil, in São Paulo. And of course, I do everything online. But I'm wrapping up research on the judicialization of COVID-19 policies in Brazil. That was an interesting thing because of how the government handled or not handled the COVID crisis. Most of the leaders in the government, state, and city levels, they had to do whatever they could to try and stop the crisis. Because of that, we have different types of policies, you can imagine. But the court had to jump in and say, hey, we cannot have this kind of policy. We need to have this kind of policy. The courts were called to organize the system of policies and COVID-19 related policies, of course. So I'm studying this process of the use of the courts during the COVID-19 crisis in Brazil. And I'm wrapping up actually this research because now I have a new project, the one that I passionate about, starting to study the environmental racism and quilombos in Brazil. Quilombos are communities of Black people. They are actually remnants of communities back from the slavery times. They live sort of in the same way in a solidarity community. And I'm working with the idea of quilombism, which is to live in a community based in solidarity, not only between people, but also with the environment. So this is something that I'm in the early stages of the research, but I'm really passionate about right now.
Cool. I'm so glad I asked you that. That sounds like really interesting research. All right. So let's talk about your doctoral journey. You've already shared with us how you ended up in a doctoral journey. You know, you were a lawyer. They asked you to come teach. And then eventually they were like, okay, you need a master's degree and a doctoral degree. Was there anything specific about the school that you decided to get your degree from? Did you consider anywhere else, or was it just like, you know, this is where I'm teaching, so I should get my degree here? Can you talk a little bit about the decision of where to actually do the master's and then do the PhD?
Sure. The master's, I went back to this school that I was undergrad student. So it's the same law school where I had my professors, I knew some people. So I went back there, which is a Catholic school. It is private, so I had to pay. I didn't have funding to do my master exactly. In Brazil, public schools are free, so you don't have to pay a cent for it. On my PhD, I knew that I couldn't afford to pay the PhD, and I'm really connected with the federal university in my state, Pernambuco, because I went to school there, like first school until high school. I was inside there. They have like this lab school where professors learning to be teachers, or people that are learning to be teachers, they get to train and do their internships there. And of course, they need students. So I was in this school. So I have a personal attachment with the university that I went for PhD, but also it was the best program in political science in the region. And we do not have the culture of mobility in Brazil that you guys have here. So usually we tend to go to universities in the same cities that we live. We don't move that much. Although there are, of course, you're going to listen to stories of people moving, and there are some fundings in different universities for that. But in my case, I did everything same city that I lived for my whole life.
That's interesting, kind of like cultural context, because yeah, it is very different from how it is in the US, but I know that it's not that different from how it is in other African countries. I'm thinking of in Kenya, Nigeria, people don't often kind of like move across the country to go to college or even graduate school. So that I'm glad you brought that up. That is a very weird thing that we do here in America, where we like uproot our entire lives to go to a whole nother state for school. So that's really interesting. You know, you hinted at this a little bit earlier, being Black Brazilian and being from the Northeast, not Northeastern, the Northeast part of Brazil. So can you talk about some of the unique challenges that you faced as a Black Brazilian woman in these educational spaces? Were there other Black Brazilian women faculty? Was it just you? Can you kind of just talk a little bit about the way that your racial identity, as well as your gender identity, kind of played probably a major factor into your educational experience?
Sure. It is an interesting one because, first of all, I'm trying to see where I start. But yeah, I didn't have any Black women professors in law school. I had one. She wasn't a mentor, but I remember having one course with one dark-skinned, gorgeous woman. Then I had one male Black professor. And my PhD also had one male Black professor, and that was it. Master's, I do not remember, any. So basically, although we are in Black city, most of Recife, it's one of the oldest cities in Brazil. The process of colonization started there. They have a huge history of plantation, sugar plantation. So most of the enslaved people went to this region. We have a great number, not like Salvador. I think people that like Brazil will understand Salvador is the blackest city of Brazil. But in Recife, if you move from favela to the upper scale neighborhood, you're going to see the difference in color. So if you look into academia, it's the same thing. If you look at the students, nowadays, we have more Black students in law schools, which is great, but that wasn't the case when I started law school. It was me and a couple more students because we came from the affirmative actions of the government at the time. So I started law school with inside the affirmative action policy at the time. In all the spaces that I was in, I was either the darkest person or somewhat the darkest person. And I'm not that dark, as you can see.
I was going to say, I was like, you know, people listening can't see you, but they can look at your headshot later. Like you were, I think in an American context, you're definitely not dark at all.
No.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. And I'm a child of the process of whitening in Brazil, because if you look into my ancestors, they are dark-skinned, but we start to white down. My sister is even lighter than me, and this is the process of whitening. Every space that I was in, I knew that I was accepted as well because I could pass in these areas. And I had that somewhat conscious. Nowadays, of course, I read a lot better compared to the past, but my colleagues that are darker, they are either tokenized or they do not enter the same spaces. During the PhD also, I didn't have that notion as well. Oh, well, I remember some cases of being singled out class and by some professors, not only because of race, also because of gender. Law is a male environment, male white cis environment. And well, I hate law. I'm sorry, guys.
Well, let's get real. I mean, that's your truth. That's your truth.
A lot of bad memories. It changes a lot when I start teaching because of affirmative actions. They start to take place and they start to change. You can see a change in the body of students, at least a lot more Black women starting And it is start to changing now. Finally, the oldest law school in Recife just signed a contract with the first Black women professor, like after 300 years, 200 years. I don't know how old this school is, but it is like 200 years. The first Black woman professor just signed the contract last year. So just you see the environment.
It's interesting because you study the way that the courts shape policies that perhaps were politically motivated and politically driven, but kind of like needed court action in order to move forward. And I'm just, as you're talking about the way that affirmative action policies in Brazil like really contributed to the diversification, at least in the student body of law schools, and I'm assuming probably in other areas of study too. And I can't help but think about the affirmative action case going on right now in the Supreme Court. And this case to me is like not even, it's like not even about affirmative action, because I don't really think America has affirmative action in a true way, or at least it's definitely not in the way that it sounds as if Brazil did. But I just, yeah, I'm thinking, I'm not really into like law. I don't really think about law that much, but you are now making me realize the importance of the courts in shaping policy that really just transform the way that our lives operate, especially around education and representation and inclusion. So thank you for sharing that. Even though you don't like law for very good reasons, I still appreciated hearing part of that story and part of that journey. So we've talked a little bit about challenges, and I'm sure you had more to share, but I always like to ask people about their successes and happy moments in the program, because I don't know about you, but for me, like there's just so much trauma and so like so many bad moments that I remember, but there were some good parts. So can you just share what were some of the good parts about your PhD?
Sure. I wouldn't be here talking to you if it weren't for my PhD. So I wouldn't be here at all, because I'm not a dreamer, never dreamed to be in the US, living here. I know this is a dream of a lot of people, and I respect that, but it wasn't my dream. My dream was to stay in Brazil and work in Brazil and whatnot. But during my PhD, I faced a lot of challenges, as I said, some personal challenges as well. But one thing that I saw during my PhD was mental health. So I decided to seek for a therapy. And through therapy, I found in myself, it's not the dream, but I believed that I could apply for funding to visit a different university, to go to different places. And because of that, I came here the first time in 2018 to do research at UAlbany with a great professor. And I learned that there are other possibilities, that there are other worlds around, and I could do more. I was capable, not like could just, okay, there's this possibility. No, but I'm capable of doing. And I would never, I think I would be in Brazil until now working as I used to work if I didn't believe in myself. But I only did that because I sought for mental health during my PhD. So it was a bad experience, of course, as I think everyone that comes here says. But there was that, the possibility of knowing different worlds, of connecting with different people, people from different parts of the world with different backgrounds that saw me in different ways, which is interesting as well, that you learn a lot about yourself when you talk to different people. Also, I found a family and love in this country. That was something that I was not expecting, but of course, it's something that I embraced and I'm grateful for. I have this family here. I have happiness because of my PhD. It was a difficult process, especially writing during COVID. I think that many people that passed through it understands that was a really difficult to write. I wrote my dissertation during 2020. That was the most difficult process. But I received my family, my dog, a big job that I'm trying to thrive in it. But everything that came after the PhD, I'm just grateful for.
Oh, I love that. I love that for you so much. So for students who, and I want to preface this question by saying that, you know, doctoral degree, I'm not saying that universities in the US are something to strive for or that they are better than universities elsewhere. That's not at all the case. But for any scholars who are studying, maybe doing their doctoral degrees in their country of origin, and they're interested in making connections with other researchers, maybe doing a visiting postdoc or something at a school in the US, at a university in the US, what are some tips or advice that you might have for them since you were able to build connections and just to kind of like enter, you know, it's a, kind of like that first entry point you talked about, the postdoc and or doing research rather at University of Albany. That was your first entry point. So what's some pieces of advice that you might have for someone who's just interested in opening up their world beyond the university that they're in right now?
Yeah. If you're Brazilian, if you're listening, you're Brazilian, I collaborate with a project that is called Negritude no PhD, meaning blackness in PhD. So we teach and try to stimulate Black Brazilian people to do exactly what you said, like to go international, to try and apply for universities in different places, not only to study on PhD path or do a visiting scholar or something like that. If you're in academia, it is fundamental for you to look outside your scope of study, of place of where you live. That's something that I always try to criticize with all due respect to everyone that is listening. But in the United States in general, not only academia, tend to look to itself.
Absolutely. That's not a criticism. That's a fact.
I'm an outsider, so I want to respect. But this is something from my point of view. As a Brazilian, people do not know about what's happening in Canada. It's right there, like 3 hours from here. And there's a lot going on besides the lines of the United States. And you can learn a lot if you look into different places and different realities, even about yourself, as I said. Being Black in the United States, for example, you can learn a lot if you learn about the struggles of being Black in Brazil. So I've listened like many times that it is more difficult to be Black in the United States than to be Black in Colombia, being Black in Brazil and whatnot. There's no such thing of it's worse or better. It's just difficult. It's just difficult, period. But how difficult? What can we learn from their struggles? What can we learn from with solidarity? So work together. So if you're in academia, look for researchers outside your area that are doing the same thing that you are with different objects, but same context or same theory. Go, you know that funding is difficult, but if you can find funding, go to different conferences in different countries, meet people from all over the world, learn different languages. I know because you're an English speaker, everything seems easier. But for example, if you learn Spanish, you can talk to most of the America. So this is something that makes things easier. Learn a language, go to conferences, send emails to people that you think are interesting, but be respectful when you approach those people. If I can have 1 minute to say this experience that I just had, I know that we connected because of a talk that I believe Instagram Live that I did with a gorgeous person from that I connected through a advocacy. But just like your email, I received a couple of other emails inviting to talk, to just have a conversation. But some of these emails were like, oh, on your topic, I've just talked to so-and-so, and we learned a lot about Brazil, race in Brazil, and being Black in Brazil. So here's what I learned from this white man professor in the United States. I think you're going to learn a lot about being Black in Brazil from this professor. So I would just say, if you're approaching someone, especially if from a different background, don't try to teach them what is it like to be them. But be respectful, be nice, and offer something for them. That's something that I always try in my path. I'm a shy person, but I try to meet people that are interesting that I can learn from.
I'm cracking up because when I'm just imagining like what has to go through your mind to write an email to someone to tell them that they should learn about their own life through the work of a white man. But yeah, people are really wild out here. But I think your general advice about collaborating, I think, is useful for both scholars outside the US, but also scholars in the US. So, you know, this idea of thinking beyond your university, thinking beyond, you know, like who you see all the time at conferences. Maybe there's a conference in somewhere else in the world that you, if you can scrap together the funding to go to it, you will be able to just meet a whole bunch of, you know, people who are not necessarily in your normal network, in your normal like circle of orbit. So, and that could be one really good professional development, but also really good personal growth and development opportunity. So I love that piece of advice. As we start to wrap up, I want to close with, we always ask, or we try to ask two different questions when I remember, two different questions for our guests. And so the first question is, what is one thing that you would do differently, if any, during your doctoral journey?
I had to work a lot because I had a stipend as a student, but it was not enough to pay rent and whatnot. But I regret that I didn't have time to study more, focus more on research methods, different areas, different objects. I would like to go back and read more, learn more, do different classes, not only those that I had to do. And it is the struggle. Either you work or you're inside the university all the time. This is the thing that I regret that I didn't do.
Yeah, that's such a delicate balance. And it's so common for Black women who are pursuing doctoral degrees. It's rare that we ever have enough funding. I have come across very few people who have not had to work in grad school. But then that means that you're not able to devote the same amount of time to research and learning that your classmates who are not working because they have families who are paying their rent, that they're able to do. And so, yeah, I feel you there. I also worked throughout grad school. And I don't know if I'm at the point where I say I wish I had learned more, but it is unfair, right? And so it's an experience that we often have to work and other people don't. So I completely hear you on that. And so our last question is, what is one piece of advice? You've already given so much advice, but what is one piece of advice that you have for either prospective or current Black female doctoral students?
Establish a community. Because by yourself, you're strong, you're capable, but you are weaker if you're by yourself. So establish a community inside the university, inside your area, especially with other Black women. This idea of having your quilombo is exactly having your community, the community that you can confide with your problems and that can help you. I'm so grateful for the people that I found in my path that helped me to be here and helped me through my process. And even if you don't have a supportive mentor, find this support in other students, other professors, somewhere inside your academic world. Build this community, do networking, and also be smart because you're going to need people in the future. So people is the key. You need to build a community and networking to think of your future.
Really, really good advice. So thank you so much, Dr. Tassiana, for joining us on the Cohort Sisters podcast. I learned a lot, and I learned it from a person who actually experienced it and not from some white man. So thank you for sharing all of your insights and experiences. And I wish you the best of luck and continued joy and happiness in this new postdoctoral journey that you're on.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it. It was so fast. Yes. It feels fast, but it was great to talk to you and to know you a little bit more. And of course, I'm going to follow you wherever you are on social media.
Absolutely. And we are going to drop all of your links as well in the show notes so that people can keep in touch with your work too. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to this week's episode of the Cohort Sisters podcast. If you are a Black woman interested in joining the Cohort Sisters membership community, or you're looking for more information on how to support or partner with Cohort Sisters, please visit our website at www.cohortsisters.com. You can also find us on all social media platforms at Cohort Sisters. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cohort Sisters podcast and leave us a quick review wherever you're listening. Thank you so much for joining us this week, and we'll catch you in next week's episode.